Good morning. Today's reading is taken from My Father and Myself by J.R. Ackerley, beginning at chapter 7. Because of his rupture, my brother entered the war a good deal later than I. He was posted to a battalion of the Northumberland Fusiliers. This unit, however, seemed stuck in England, and my brother, chafing to do his bit, got himself transferred to my battalion, the 8th East Surreys, in which I had been serving in France since the summer of 1915. He did not join me there until the Christmas of 1916, after my return from England, where I had spent a few months recuperating from wounds. By this time, though he was my senior in age, I was his senior in rank, a captain and company commander, while he was still a second lieutenant in charge of a platoon. He therefore had to salute me, which he did gladly and conscientiously. Let me not appear to boast, however. My promotion was not due to any military proficiency I possessed, or any distinctions gained, but simply to the fact that most of the other officers in my battalion had been killed on 1st July 1916, the action in which I received my wounds. These wounds of mine are not without interest, at any rate to me. They showed me something which I was to notice once often again in my character, that I have a fairly well-developed instinct for self-preservation, both physical and moral. If the old campaigner of Tel el-Kebir had known as much about my wounds as I did, what would he have thought of me? The Battle of the Somme, Sir Douglas Haig's masterly operation, has often been described. This vast, full-scale attack was prepared for by an incessant bombardment of the German lines, prolonged over many days, and so heavy that, we are told, all resistance would be crushed, the enemy wire destroyed, their trenches flattened, and such Germans as survived reduced to a state of gibbering imbecility. It would be, for us, a walkover. Very different was our reception. The air, when we at last went over the top in broad daylight, positively hummed, buzzed, and whined with what sounded like hordes of wasps and hornets, but were, of course, bullets. Far from being crushed, the Germans were in full possession of senses better than our own. Their smartest snipers and machine gunners were coolly waiting for us. GHQ, as was afterwards realised, had handed the battle to them by snobbishly distinguishing us officers from the men, giving us revolvers instead of rifles, and marking our rank plainly upon our cuffs. The gibbering imbeciles confronting us were thus enabled to pick off the officers first, which they had been carefully instructed to do, leaving our army almost without leadership. Many of the officers in my battalion were struck down the moment they emerged into view. My company commander was shot through the heart before he advanced a step. Neville, the battalion buffoon, who had a football for his men to dribble over to the flattened and deserted German lines, and was then going to finish off any gibbering imbecile he might meet with the shock of his famous grin — he had loose dentures and could make a skull-like grimace when he smiled — was also instantly killed, and so was fat Bobby Soames, my best friend. I had spent the previous evening with him, and he had said to me quietly, without emotion, "I'm going to be killed tomorrow. I don't know how I know, but I do." How far I myself got, I don't remember. Not more than a couple of hundred yards is my guess. I flew over the top like a greyhound and dashed forward through the wasps, bent double. Squeamish always about blood, mutilations and death, averting my gaze so far as I could from the litter of corpses left lying about whenever we marched up to the line through other regiments' battlefields, never hurrying when word was passed down to me as duty officer in the trenches that someone had been killed or wounded, in the hope that, if I dawdled, the worst of the mess might be cleared up before I arrived. My special private terror was a bullet in the balls, which accounts psychologically, for it was, of course, unavailing physically, for the crouched-up attitude in which I hurled myself at the enemy. The realisation that I was making an ass of myself soon dawned. Looking back, I saw that my platoon was still scrambling out of the trench, and had to wait until they caught up with me. My young Norfolk servant, Willamott, who then walked at my side, fell to the ground. "I'm paralysed, sir," he whimpered, his face paper white, his large blue ox-like eyes terrified. A bullet, perhaps aimed at me with my revolver and badges, had severed his spine. Here ends the reading.